You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Jared Waitley. Here's a snapshot of Monday, June 5. We took your snap judgments with Jordan DeGoey, front of mind for Nathan in Wellington.
G'day, Jared. Look, I'm a Collingwood supporter and have been for the all of my 45 years on this earth. And I agree that, you know, in the current environment, he's bumped, concussion and all of that, he will take his whack and he'll probably get 3 or so weeks for it. But the thing I think I find, I'm not offended by it, but it's over the top, is this narrative that Kane has been spreading that it's some type of weak act perpetrated on a defenseless, ill-prepared young person coming into the game. Like, you are still allowed to bump, and although this was poorly executed and probably a poor decision on DeGoey's part, so it's not a weak act. It's not gas behind the play. It's not Barry Hall whacking someone down in the forward line. And I think that Kane's perception or that this is going to somehow derail his season or derail Collingwood's season is just over the top. It's ridiculous.
And Brendan in Glen Huntley had Dave Warner in his sights.
He's basically said when he's going to retire. Mentally, it sort of tells you that you're pretty much done. What's the point on the Australian selectors continuing to play him when they could put a fresh face or someone that's going to, continue on and go a lot longer in the test arena?
The Western Bulldogs were the big issue on the Monday means test for David King.
It's hard outside looking in to work out why the Dogs are not a lock for top four this year, last year, the year before. It's not on talent, is it? I mean, they've got some superstar talent. So is it the way they play that leaves other teams in the game? Are they just not efficient with the ball? Are they just not playing the game that allows them to score freely? I'm not sure what the perfect goal is for the Dogs. I'm not sure what it looks like. What, in your mind's eye, what does the perfect goal look like for the Dogs that necessarily doesn't involve a Bontempelli or a McRae or a Libbard? Like, this is the system goal. What does it look like? I don't know if I can answer that with any clarity. I'd be sort of guessing. I'm hot on them defensively. Their numbers stack up okay, and the general points against and all those sorts of things, they stack up okay. But as soon as Liam Jones is not a major factor behind the ball, it looks incredibly vulnerable. And then now they've got a problem with Ed Richards, who saves them time and time. He's a star, yeah. Ed Richards. As soon as he went off, I thought they're in real trouble here, real trouble. It was brilliant coaching by Chris Scott to set the game up the way he did. Lee Montagna showed that terrifically last night. They basically pulled all their half-forwards up and left space in behind and charged back. I talk about the forward 50 efficiency of the Cats all the time. Just they know what the forwards want. It's like that Hawkins is going to mark the ball boundary side every time. We talked about Fremantle covering that a couple of weeks ago. Great coaching, ahead of the curve. But they just have a way of just finishing 5-8. I know they won it from 7th in 2016. Everyone will talk about that, but they are better than this. They are better than, what are they now? What's 7-5 or something? In my opinion, they're a better team than that. So why aren't they? Like, last man on the list is Liam Jones, really. He shouldn't be a major player in what they're doing here. I know he's experienced. I know he's got probably two years of footy left. But shouldn't it be others by now? I scratch my head with them. I'm not sure. I don't know if the Dogs fans have got more clarity than that. I look at Aaron Norton. He has one kick during the second and third quarters, and I go, well, are you really maximising him? Like, Jeremy Cameron is a like type, and people say he's not. He's a different player than him. But it's a like position. Throw Norton on the ball. Throw him behind the ball. Richards goes down. Hey, let's just put Norton behind the ball for 5 minutes. You can't pack mark everything in the forward line anyway. Like, I know I'm banging on about Aaron Norton, okay? But he's prior to this round, I haven't updated the numbers just yet, he took 17 contested marks inside 50 and 11 uncontested. That's a shocking balance. That's you're basically just kicking the ball on top of packs and saying, Aaron, can you sort this out for us? I think Jamar is playing some really good footy and looks like he's about to go bang and take a couple of games by the throat. I like what Waitman does. He works so hard, but nothing comes easy for those guys. So they got problems, not irreversible. The season's far from irretrievable. It's a long year. We keep talking about that. But this has got to be a top four team.
And Kingy is warmed by the Suns' pair of wins in Darwin.
I've been banging on about this crew for a while because winning's the last thing that comes. Right? So you've got to get your house in order. They had to get their house in order last year and they took some pain with the list decisions and everyone laughed at them because they tried to get their salary cap in order, but they had to take some pain to do that. And it takes a brave club and a brave coach to say, yep, let's do it. He knew the pressure that was coming this year, so that's an awkward start to the 23 campaign.
Yep.
And then they start the season and I was up there, so I saw the pain they had. They had no Weller at halfback, no Powell, and there were a couple of others missing that were potential halfback flankers. Those damaging types. The halfback flanker right now is the most damaging position on the ground. Now, people don't want to hear that. They don't. But Champion Data have done a ratings portfolio on who's creating the most scoring, and it's that halfback roamer. He's not a halfback flanker anymore. He's a roamer. So the Dacos, Sinclair, Dan Houston types that roam, that are not standing next to their man anymore. They're a halfback roamer slash midfielder. So right now for the last 6 weeks, once the ball leaves clearance, the Gold Coast Suns are the number one team in terms of winning contest outside in general play. The number one team. That's an asset that can take you a long way in a final series. So once you build that, and once the players live this for a period of time, you become a bankable team week in, week out. If you start winning contests on the outside, we all laud what Matty Rowe's doing at stoppage. But I'm not even talking about that. So take that asset off the table. It's once the ball leaves there, they're winning it. So it's Ballard behind the ball. It's Powell behind the ball. It's Lukosius forward of the ball. Ben King, who they didn't have for 12 months, says this is what you've been missing. This is what you've been, and you've had to try and manufacture it with Chol and Casbolt, and they've had their moments and they've had their time, and Casbolt's been brilliant for them, but he's not Ben King. So when Ben King rears up and goes bang, I reckon the whole squad go, gee whiz, this is how good we can be. And it fuels itself. They bring Bailey Humphrey in and they get that energy that only a youngster can bring, an arrogance that a young guy who knows nothing but being the best player or one of the best players in a junior comp that just wants to kick goals, just wants to play footy, just wants to have fun.
Robert Craddock on Australia's biggest selection issues for the Ashes.
I do think the two most singularly important selection issues on this tour, by a substantial margin, R. Warner's future and Josh Hazlewood, who was ruled out of the Test Championship. He bowled brilliantly, apparently, in the nets with enormous gusto, but then maybe he just felt something wasn't quite right and they put Michael Nisa into the squad for the final and Josh won't be playing. So the Hazlewood and Warner are their big issues, 100%. But I say again, no matter what David says about his future, it will be irrelevant to the selection equation in England. He will either, if he is out of form for three or four tests, that will be it. If he's in form, he carries on seamlessly to Australia. And once he's back in Australia, where we all know he tends to score a lot of runs, they won't drop him mid-series. He will either get that series or he won't. He will know at the start of the summer whether he can retire in Sydney. It's interesting. Steve Waugh, remember, did a last lap against India. He got there. But it was pretty tense times, though, I have to say.
And Crash told the story of missing Warnie's ball of the century 30 years ago.
I was there, but we were on strike.
Oh.
So our papers had gone on strike. So I was lying in my bed at the Copthorne Hotel watching it on television. And so I wasn't allowed to write about it for 24 hours. So I was absolutely devastated by that. And only missed the greatest moment of the century, Jared, because they said, you do not turn up to this ground. We are on strike. Could you leave the ground immediately, please? So I'm lying in my bed watching it. But my memory from it is a couple of things, that he just took cricket where it's never been before, into that blind spot, into the batsman's, drifting the ball into the blind spot in the batsman's leg stump, where no coaching manual ever goes. No coaching manual ever says, now, when the ball drifts this way from a leg spinner. So it was a freakish bit of work. The second thing was, for the rest of that series, Jared, there was dozens of kids bowling leg spin during lunch breaks in county grounds. They'd swarm the ground. It was the most beautiful thing. And the third thing was talking to Shane Warne's mentor, Terry Jenner, for the definitive quote when he said, this ball will make 1,000 kids take up leg spin, but hey, I'm tipping that none will get through to the elite level of test cricket because that, it's so hard. He said, there'll be thousands at junior level and underage level, and there they were in under 15 state teams. You'd see photos of leg spinners with earrings and blonde hair and one Australian carnival. There was six of them, one from each state. They all had the earrings and blonde hair. None of them made it. It's that hard. Leg spin is so hard.
And that's just a snapshot. The full program and all interviews are available through the Waitley podcast. Subscribe at sen.com.au.